Fun Counter Guy, thanks for coming by. Welcome to another edition of Trying to Herd Cats, where I throw anonymous quotes at anonymous people and see where it goes. So let's get right into it. Here's the first quote. "'Tis sometimes the height of wisdom to feign stupidity."
I think that I've lived most of my life very specifically trying to make sure that I never, ever, ever feigned stupidity. And I tend to tell the entire story in all of its explicit details, whether or not my audience has even asked for that level of complexity. And in my current middle-aged state, as I'm starting to wise up about life, I'm starting to realize that sometimes it's for everyone's best interest, including mine, to hold something back and not give everything away with the very first breath. So I wouldn't say that that's feigning stupidity, but I think that feigning stupidity is in some ways a way of keeping some of your cards to yourself and not playing the whole hand up front. And I suppose that there's also a nice lack of responsibility, because if you say that you have all the information about something, you're kind of taking responsibility for taking care of it. And if you pretend like you don't know, then you have some room to not be the leader, but maybe still contribute from the sidelines.
Again, 'tis sometimes the height of wisdom to feign stupidity.
Yes. For an example, working in corporations and everything, sometimes you have to be the unknown. Just do what you have to do, go in, do your time, I would say 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, and go home. The minute you come up with an idea that surpasses the CEO of the company, you're done. You're done. You're not climbing no corporate ladder.
Yeah.
So whatever you have, keep it to yourself, and to try to create something that the knowledge that you have, or the wisdom that you do have, create something with it. Leave that company. Yeah. Don't try to feel that, oh, well, I can help the company, or they can benefit from me for knowing this wisdom or this knowledge that I have. No, they will take advantage of you and then kick you out, because they're going to feel in their minds that, hey, he's smarter than me. So therefore, he wants my chair. He wants my office. So how most people run corporations is that the people that's under them are supposedly dumb versus them being wise or smart. Because they're smart, you just better be smart to yourself. Because the minute the CEO knows that this gentleman is smart, because to them, danger, red light, danger.
Are you playing dumb now?
Yes.
I'm just kidding. Oh, because your answer makes no sense. I'm just kidding.
Oh, wow.
Again, 'tis sometimes the height of wisdom to feign stupidity.
There are different ways of playing stupid and different reasons for playing stupid. And it can be the smartest thing to do. A lot of times, one, because you may not be as smart as you think, for one. Yeah. You know, someone, I know you're in a room, somebody's explaining something, you think you already know it, whatever it is, and so you want to blurt out this or that instead of just shutting up and listening. You're better off shutting up and listening until you've heard everything, because it may not end up where you thought it was going to go. There's also another aspect of it where sometimes when people know that you know something, well, they want to take advantage of that. And your best option is to act like you don't know. So there's,
can you give an example?
That, to me, I guess the best kind of example, I don't know, it immediately kind of makes me think of the way middle management might utilize their subordinates or the people that they're supposedly managing. If they, gosh, I mean, in a work type situation, that plays out all the time. Mm-hmm. There is one type of situation where you'll end up with a heavier workload than other people because they know that you know stuff mm-hmm. that the other people don't know, or they think that they don't know because they didn't speak up and mm-hmm. say that they knew. Mm-hmm. They played stupid. Maybe you know that they know how to do that mm-hmm. stuff, but you end up doing all the work because you said that you knew how to do it. And so you're doing work that could be spread out amongst other people. There could be a situation that's more personal or related to friends, family, gosh, especially like family or things you may know about that you really don't want them to know you know about. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Just that,
based on what you just said, do you think that's a good situation for a company, for example, or some kind of structure where they've created a place where it pays to be stupid? It pays to pretend to be stupid anyway.
I don't think that it's good, but it exists. Mm-hmm. And that's not just the workplace. It's like that in schools. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about what are you if you're really smart in a classroom? Well, you can become the nerd. You can become the person that gets poked fun at. You're like mm-hmm. teacher's pet if mm-hmm. you raise your hand at every question and mm-hmm. you know the answers. Everybody knows you know the answer and they're sick of it. So you start playing stupid mm-hmm. so that other people can get some play, or so that you don't get made fun of for being a brainiac mm-hmm. and all of this stuff. And, you know, that's, it's a bad thing. I mean, you should be able to shine as brightly as you can in any situation.
Again, 'tis sometimes the height of wisdom to feign stupidity.
Well, sometimes playing stupid means that you don't want to start an argument. If you can't think of a reply that you can give in truth and love, you're better to be silent.
Next quote. If I want to be free from any other man's dictation, I must understand that I can have no other man under my control.
I don't know. I kind of think like that's like a this whole like the ideas about fighting the system and fighting the man, but if, how that really isn't a reality. Like in this case, you don't want somebody above you because there's a chain reaction and somebody will automatically have to be under you no matter what you did. It's an idea that is not feasible because you hear of all these small business owners who are like, I just got tired of my job and my boss, he was horrible, I hated him, so I'm going to go and start my own company. And then when they start their own company, they have people under them who will turn around and say, my boss, he's horrible, he's this, he's that, I'm going to start my own company. And so it doesn't matter how much you try, there is always going to be somebody under somebody.
Right.
Could, I think even like in...
Could that, in a way, though, be a kind of bit of a stage or metamorphosis? We all need to be the employee. And then at some point, kind of like the caterpillar and the butterfly.
Yeah.
Okay, now it's time for me to be the boss.
Yeah. It's like a never-ending cycle.
Again, if I want to be free from any other man's dictation, I must understand that I can have no other man under my control.
Oh, I totally agree with that.
Okay.
And I don't control, well, okay, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
I don't believe I'm in any man's control, or ever have been.
Mm-hmm. So no one controls you?
Ever.
Yeah, okay.
No. My dad, when I was young, probably where it stemmed from, there was one, I worked for his wife, and I would paint, and I would paint for her, and so I started having my own money.
Paint, like, the walls?
Crafts.
Oh, okay.
I would go to school, and then I would paint at night for her, and so I started having my own money, and I think one year, as a funny comment, it was, well, you should just go buy your own school clothes, and I did, and it was awesome.
Uh-huh.
It was awesome. So my goal being, from then on, never to have anybody, and money was the most explicit, you know.
So you mean, like, it was kind of a dependent situation because it was your father, right?
It was his wife.
His wife
at the current time.
And so she kind of controlled you a little bit?
Well, I worked for her.
You worked for her.
So, you know, whichever way you see it. She had a business that she couldn't have gotten out the volume she did if I didn't paint all night.
Uh-huh.
But my dad lived on part of her salary. So it was... Yeah. We were more dependent on her. We lived in her house. It was her rules. It was her stuff. And And that was really freeing to break through from, but I thought it was my dad. It turned out later it was actually her control that she had on us.
Did she try to fight it, that you were had become independent?
She's interesting. She does that through a, you can't do it without me. You need to be so free. And this is exactly how you do it. This is how I tell you to do it. And if you don't do it that way, then you're not being free. You're being just stupid. Do it this way, kind of thing. So it was a control, you know.
Did she like anybody controlling her? Is your dad control her at all?
She ate him alive, so he must have controlled her in some fashion, because the anger she felt towards him towards the end of their marriage is shocking. And my dad is, you know, a very big man, but he didn't make a lot of money. He's smart and kind, but he's not by any means brilliant. So the amount of angst that she had against him to do what happened in the end is...
You mind saying what she did?
She took everything. She had money and millions, and he had helped support the creation of all that, and in the settlement it was, I'll pay off your credit card and you just go away. And that's cruel when he's years from retirement and helped someone. I mean, she's lifting a house because she wants a basement.
Wow.
Like, literally cutting a house and lifting it. That's what you do now when you want a basement.
So he had zero. What's he doing now?
He does maintenance for Girl Scouts.
Aw, that's kind of sweet.
Before that, he was a cheese curator at Kroger's.
That's kind
of... I love my dad.
Yeah, that's great, actually. It's almost like a Hallmark movie.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, it serves him better, because had he been anything else, he probably still, in our eyes, in our girls' eyes, would have been a very ugly man, because that was his role that he was given and played into while we were in high school. And then what?
So she turned him against you in some ways?
She's interesting.
Okay.
We weren't allowed home. I spent, I would come home from school, so I worked, and I would come home from my job, and I would have to stay in the garage during the middle of winter in Wisconsin until somebody was home. I wasn't allowed in the house. Sarah had to not come home until around 5 or 6 at night when her school got out of 3.
Your sister?
Yeah, and she's 16. This is a 16 and 17-year-old. And granted, she had a home. We had a home that we should have been able to go to. We never had any friends over. We never had anything. And she told me one day that, you know, my dad had video cameras on me so that I wouldn't do anything wrong. So it's, yeah, she's... Cruel.
Where is she today?
She's in Wisconsin, and, you know, she still texts me. And
like, everything's cool.
You know what? I'm not going to deal with her on that level. It's not... I don't care enough at this time to... About her well-being.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten over that. I'm bitter, so I don't care enough about her well-being to let her know the impact of what she does and what she has done.
Again, if I want to be free from any other man's dictation, I must understand that I can have no other man under my control.
No, I would have to say that that's not so, because there would be instances where I would not want someone controlling me. But if I was in a place of employment, for example, and I was the foreman, the manager, and I had to give orders, I had to control my people, wherever it may be, I would have to control them.
So you're saying you really don't care to be under someone else controlling you, but sometimes you have to control others.
Yes, I wouldn't say that I would mind being under somebody else's control, because actually I have in several instances in my life when I worked for somebody else.
Sure.
And always under God's control. I have been under men's control, and there's been men that had to be under my control.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. That's about it on that one.
Okay.
Man, those hard questions, Dave. How about you going to ask me who crossed the Red Sea or something like that?
Again, If I want to be free from any other man's dictation, I must understand that I can have no other man under my control.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think that, yeah, a lot of people have this sense of being under somebody's control when they're really not. I think you only allow yourself to be controlled. I often told the kids, and they always hated me for it, especially Kelly, that you cannot control what people do or say to you. You can only control how you react to it. They can hurt you or they cannot hurt you.
Third quote, we must recognize that the evil deeds of the enemy neighbor, the thing that hurts, never quite expresses all that he is. An element of goodness may be found even in our worst enemy. Each of us has something of a schizophrenic personality, tragically divided against ourselves. A persistent civil war rages within all of our lives. Something within us causes us to lament with Ovid, the Latin poet, quote, I see and approve the better things, but follow worse, unquote. Or to agree with Plato that human personality is like a charioteer having two headstrong horses, each wanting to go in a different direction. Or to repeat with the Apostle Paul, quote, the good that I would, I do not, but the evil which I would not, that I do.
Don't we all live that? I live that. You know, I think I fight a constant war inside of me too, not as forceful as it used to be.
So it does get easy over time?
Yeah, because ex credendi, lex credendi. What I pray is what I ultimately come to believe, rather than what I believe is what I ultimately come to pray. Because I think we're all malleable on the inside that way. And it becomes road to us and becomes the norm when it's acting the way you want to become rather than being the person you are. You act the person you want to become. And when you do that, you don't have to fight that battle after a while. You know, it's there. Mm-hmm. I mean, that side is in us. The evil side's always in us.
Right.
It doesn't always have control. Or another way of looking at it, from a psychological standpoint, is having an imago, an image that's about a foot out in front of you, and the rest that the between the image and the inside is that buffer, so that I have time to have things buffered and come to me while I'm thinking about them. And then my reaction going out through the buffer, so I have time to say, whoops, don't really want to say that, or I don't want to do that, or I don't want to be that. And so those are different ways of, I think, of saying the same thing, looking at the same thing. That I don't have to be prey to my first reaction. Uh-huh. I don't have to be prey to evil that's been done to me. I get to choose who I want to be in the world. And the more I do that, the easier it is.
Again, we must recognize that the evil deeds of the enemy neighbor, the thing that hurts, never quite expresses all that he is. An element of goodness may be found even in our worst enemy. Each of us has something of a schizophrenic personality, tragically divided against ourselves. A persistent civil war rages within all of our lives. Something within us causes us to lament with Ovid, the Latin poet, quote, I see and approve the better things, but follow worse, unquote. Or to agree with Plato that human personality is like a charioteer having two headstrong horses, each wanting to go in a different direction. Or to repeat with the Apostle Paul, quote, the good that I would, I do not, but the evil which I would not, that I do.
Yeah, it reminds me of a Dave Davies song.
Okay.
The guitar player for the Kinks. About, I remember how it goes, that we're on a psychic battlefield.
Was he talking about his own demons?
Probably. I think, or in general, everybody liked the quote. You know, we are in a psychic battlefield fighting for our souls to make us free. Mm-hmm. Something to that effect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think of the way people act and react. I try to be understanding and understand that I've not walked in their shoes. I don't know how they grew up. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they live or what their situation is. When people react inappropriately or like an enemy, you know, I try to understand where they're coming from. That doesn't make it right or wrong, and I don't condone it, but sometimes when you understand, it's easier to be not to react to their reaction, you know, because sometimes I'm, I guess, wrong. You know, I think we're all wounded and act on our wounds until we can patch them and heal them.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of control us.
You mentioned the Kinks guy. Mm-hmm. Do you mind telling the story about the time you met him?
Oh, Dave? First off, his first three solo albums really influenced my life. And he was metaphysical. And, you know, when you're young and idealistic, it was just perfect. So I waited for him in the hotel lobby bar at the Holiday Inn in Plattsburgh, New York.
How did you figure out where he was?
There's Plattsburgh, New York has one hotel. It's so small. It's on the Canadian border. And he was there with the band, and he was drunk. I had something to give him just as a fan. I was just out of high school. Anyways, he loved it, had his arm around me, was kissing me. It was very awkward for a young man. These girls walk up, and they said something to him, and he said in his drunk English voice, he goes, "Am I gonna f*** you tonight?" And they said no. He goes, "F*** off." And he said, "Women, they're same everywhere, blah, 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 whatever." And anywho, he gave me his address at home, 33 Totem Lane.
Really?
Yeah, I still remember it. It was, you know, as a young kid, it was just, I just did not expect that. It was like, I didn't know what to expect. So
was it
weird.
Disappointing, or was it?
It was surrealistic.
I mean, it sounds like, based on the quote we were just talking about, that he obviously was fighting a civil war as much as anybody, you know. Was,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's for sure. In fact, all his albums are still kind of about the same thing.
Again, we must recognize that the evil deeds of the enemy neighbor, the thing that hurts, never quite expresses all that he is. An element of goodness may be found even in our worst enemy. Each of us has something of a schizophrenic personality, tragically divided against ourselves. A persistent civil war rages within all of our lives. Something within us causes us to lament with Ovid, the Latin poet, quote, "I see and approve the better things, but follow worse," unquote. Or to agree with Plato that human personality is like a charioteer having two headstrong horses, each wanting to go in a different direction. Or to repeat with the Apostle Paul, quote, "The good that I would, I do not, but the evil which I would not, that I do."
This is something that I've just recently been trying to carve a little further, and that is the duality of everything. There's no motion, there's no actual motion without opposing forces. The wind doesn't move if one part isn't warmer than another part. It creates a high pressure system and a low pressure, and it's moving from one system to another.
You describe like that, it reminds me of a yin yang,
mm-hmm.
which everything
contains. I mean, people can say, you know, I'm the biggest skeptic because I was raised in such a hardcore Christian environment that, you know, it was unreasonably fervent. So to grow older and start to realize that a lot of the things that my universe and my reality were based on were at best incomplete has left me in a very skeptical situation. So for somebody to just point at a yin-yang and say something about there being a balance of forces, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's kind of, I have this negative response to it, an aversion. But actually, upon observation of the world, I have to take note that opposing forces create motion. And I think also part of that quote gets back to what we were saying about George W. Bush. You know, he was the enemy for a lot of people. I mean, a lot of my friends, you know, he's
the devil.
The devil. But you can look at almost anyone, unless they have real severe psychological disorder, you can look at just about anyone and see that everyone at that point in time is doing their absolute best that they possibly can, given their facility and the information that they have. They might have bad information, they might have a lack of facility, but everyone, at every moment, including the murderer, including Hitler. I know this is some kind of sacrilege that someone's going to flip out about, is doing what they feel is best.
Yeah, I think they all state that. I'm doing the best for the greater good.
Yeah. Or for themselves, that they believe, for whatever reason, is the best thing you can do. Like, I don't prize an altruistic action over a selfish action. I think probably some philosophers have talked about this, but you know, when you do something altruistic, are you actually doing it in the interest of another organism? You've never had their experience. Yeah. You're probably doing it because you'd like to feel like the kind of person that does an altruistic action, and that's fine. I love that you feel that way.
So I see things in result. And so, for example, I kind of don't care what the motive is.
Mm-hmm.
Whether someone was being charitable, they could have caused a whole bunch of damage, but someone was acting greedy could also cause a lot of great things. So you look at, for example, an entrepreneur. He ends up hiring a lot of people, regardless mm-hmm. if his only goal was to make money,
mm-hmm.
you know. But then you see people, I've worked in and out of charity things, you see a lot of people who had the best of intentions
mm-hmm.
and just make things much worse than they sure. were before.
Sure. Know? Well, so,
I don't fault their sincerity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like I've witnessed that for sure. I've been vegan for 5 years and, you know, I went vegan not for health reasons. I already had a super healthy diet. My meat consumption was very low, so I wasn't consuming a bunch of cholesterols and various other things that certain people might find unhealthy. I just thought, well, I like animals. You know, I'd rather not mess with them if I don't have to. And anyway, sometimes I run into people who are vegan because they're trying to lose weight for their wedding, or they're just generally interested in health or whatnot, and I guess I support the person losing weight for their wedding and the person being healthy, but, you know, for me, the focus of it being, well, if possible, I would love to save animal lives, that'd be great, and, like, reduce suffering on the whole in the world. So, if somebody's vegan because they want to look good at the club, I'm like, I'll take it how I can get it.
Mm-hmm.
The animals will take it how they can get it, you know? So I guess I'm in the same boat as you, where it's result-oriented.
Right. To go back to the original quote, can you think of a time where maybe someone was being very malicious to you and initially you had a hard time seeing their goodness or someone you thought was... and how did you... I assume eventually come to that conclusion. Like, okay,
yeah. If it's being directly malicious at me, or what I can interpret, what something hurtful towards me, it's difficult for me in those situations to see necessarily the goodness, because of course I'm emotionally involved if it's something malicious towards me. But what I can do is see what parts of it actually have nothing to do with me. I can't always do that. But there are a lot of times when people are doing something that is on purpose malicious towards you, or there's a byproduct of what they're doing that is harmful or hurtful towards you. And even if someone's being completely nasty to you, there are so many times when that's them working out something for themselves.
Do you ever draw a line like, okay, I understand you're going through a time, but man, I can't take it.
I'm so attached to actually figuring things out and working them out. I mean, there was a person in the last 24 hours that, you know, she said something to me yesterday that was hurtful, and I approached her about it and got a little bit of resolve, but there was I didn't want to be super combative, so it just took what she was saying and stepped away. And then today I had to come back and I had to say, can I just ask a follow-up question to what we were talking about yesterday? You know, I always want to make sense of my enemy.
Uh-huh.
I really do. If someone's doing something to me, it really actually bothers me most to just not understand where it's coming from. Ultimately, if I understand where it's coming from, usually it can be dissolved, or at least I can say, oh, well, on such and such a fundamental level, we have a disagreement about the way the world works or something.
And the source of the quotes? 'Tis sometimes the height of wisdom to feign stupidity. That is from Cato. Now, there's a ton of Catos back in history, so this specifically is the Cato the Elder, or Cato the Censor. He was a Roman statesman known for being old school, even back when the new school was around the 200 BC time period. A bona fide cultural warrior, Cato was often harping to others about the creeping Hellenization of Roman culture. He nostalgic for the fading past. Next quote. If I want to be free from any other man's dictation, I must understand that I can have no other man under my control. And that is from William Graham Sumner, who was a professor at Yale and is these days revered as a libertarian academic. Sumner introduced the term ethnocentrism in order to argue his opposition to imperialism. Third quote, we must recognize that the evil deeds of the enemy neighbor, the thing that hurts, never quite expresses all that he is. An element of goodness may be found even in our worst enemy. Each of us has something of a schizophrenic personality, tragically divided against ourselves. A persistent civil war rages within all of our lives. Something within us causes us to lament with Ovid, the Latin poet, quote, I see and approve the better things, but follow worse, unquote. Or to agree with Plato that human personality is like a charioteer having two headstrong horses, each wanting to go in a different direction. Or to repeat with the Apostle Paul, quote, the good that I would, I do not, but the evil which I would not, that I do. And that is from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Baptist pastor and civil rights giant born in the ATL and named after the German reformer of the same name. In the Corner, Back by the Woodpile podcast is produced by A Closet, A Pocket, and A Suitcase. You can email us at spuncounterguy@hotmail.com. And a special thanks to thebrofisticate.com.